Welcome to The Firm Report, the show where we pull back the curtain on what it really takes to build and grow a successful law practice. Each week, we'll be talking with attorneys, marketing pros, and operational specialists from law firms around the country. We'll dig into real stories, smart strategies, and the practical tips that can help you grow your firm and serve your clients better. Let's get into it.
I learned about some of these tax incentives that are basically designed for spurring innovation and effectively what venture funds in particular do, and to identify the next waves in technology and to drive investment into them.
See, it's like a legal aspect of how investors should, or just how a business owner that's taking on investment, legal, taxes, keeping the guidelines, the guardrails within there. It's definitely critical, right? We have our guest, Jonathan Fish, with us today. He is with Cap Gains, which is a member of the Legal Tech Fund. Jonathan, I'll turn to you to introduce yourself.
Well, great to see you, and thanks for having me on.
Thanks for joining.
Great. So, introduce myself. So, my background, I'm an accountant by background. I worked in public accounting for about 20 years before starting this company, Cap Gains, Inc., which focuses on tax incentives like qualified small business stock. Happy to tell you more about them.
There's no way you've been working for 20 years, man. You've been working since middle school?
It looks that way. Well, thank you for the compliment, Zachary. I started in public accounting way back in 2003. Saw a lot of changes in public accounting over time with Sarbanes-Oxley legislation and things like that. And then my kind of trajectory, I focused on a lot of niche sort of areas. And so for me, I was interested in environmental issues and focused on this specialization of accounting for environmental liabilities. And so that became a focus. And I kind of realized some of these benefits of these sort of niche focus areas and zeroing in on, in the case of those accounting issues, there are two accounting pronouncements. And maybe for me, it's just that I'm not smart enough to learn a whole lot about all of them, but by focusing on a couple of them, you get to explore all the nuances of that particular part of accounting or legislation, litigation, legal and tax or accounting aspects, and could really zero in and kind of build a, not just a specialization personally, but a network, that all focuses on that area. I did that, first with accounting for environmental issues, then kind of things transpired in my career. I found another specialization in valuation, and in particular working with private equity funds and venture funds on valuing the companies in their portfolio. And kind of saw the benefits of specializing in an area. In doing some of that work, I learned about some of these tax incentives that were basically designed for spurring innovation and effectively what venture funds in particular do, and to identify the next waves in technology and to drive investment into them. So there's a particular tax incentive qualified small business stock for that purpose, But it's very nuanced. A lot of aspects of it haven't been fully litigated, so there's a lot of kind of legal gray area in how to navigate it. And it's a huge incentive. It provides for 100% capital gains exclusion if you get it right, but there are a lot of ways to trip it up. And so it's a type of thing that it sits at this intersection of the startup community, the investment community, what government's trying to spur it with innovation. And there's just, when I saw it, there wasn't a lot of help out there. And it was kind of like an afterthought for folks that have gains rather than a planning mechanism and something to think ahead for.
So you found a specialization in niche. I mean, the acronym, what is it, QSBS?
So Qualified Small Business Stock, or QSBS stands for Qualified Small Business Stock. Code section 1202 of the tax.
Wait, qualified small business spec?
Stock.
Qualified small business stock.
Yep.
All right. So you found a niche within it falls into the legal world, right? Because it's like a legal aspect of how investors should, or just how a business owner that's taking on investment should qualify. Could you speak a little more to that? What exactly?
Yeah. So I mean, it's part of the tax code. So it's a question as to like what is legal is a bit beyond me. You know, tax falls into this bucket that it's not entirely legal and it's not entirely accounting. And in the cases of
Well, we all know if your accountant is telling you something to do that's not legal, that's probably the wrong thing to do, right? So legal, taxes, keeping the guidelines, the guardrails within there is definitely critical, right? So.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
you're
exactly.
At the cutting edge, it sounds like. You know, if your entity's a member of the legal tech fund, I mean, look, they saw something in you all that just, it's like you're innovating something in the legal stack, correct?
Yeah, exactly. So, and maybe just like you're asking to back up and just tell you about the tax instead of that could kind of frame then how we're addressing it. So the QSBS, Qualified Small Business Stock, it's been around since 1993. It was first introduced back then to, like I was saying, to drive innovation in the economy, to encourage entrepreneurs to start companies, employees to join them, investors to invest in them. And it did it all with providing for capital gains exclusion when you ultimately sell your stock, you know, when your shareholder sells their stock. And it, because of various things with it, the benefit wasn't that great until 2015. They increased the benefit to what's now 100% exclusion. So,
wow.
So that means for any shareholder with a gain that is QSBS eligible, they're saving 23.8% tax at the federal level.
Okay.
That they'd otherwise have to pay if the stock wasn't QSBS stock. And then every state treats QSBS stock differently. So most states conform to the federal rules. Other states don't. So like if you're a shareholder in California, they don't conform to the federal rules for QSBS. So if you're that California shareholder, you're exempt federally, but not at the state level. You know, you still owe capital gains tax there. And so really like for us, what we saw is, well, it's there's a lot to get this right. You know, and there are a lot of ways to trip it up. And so like,
It's right. If there's a lot of ways to get it right, there's a lot of ways to get it wrong.
To get it wrong. Yeah. A lot of things to get right, which means that you could trip it up in all types of ways. And that's what we were seeing was people would have these gains and be like, oh, I heard about this tax incentive. Does my stock qualify? Can you help me evaluate that? And then we'd see, oh, well, 5 years ago, you took this action and it caused your stock not to qualify. So,
yeah, I mean, that was a burning question in my mind. Like, when should so as Cap Gains as an entity, are you servicing the investor? Are you servicing the investment house? And also, like, when should somebody be speaking to you? Is it pre-investment, like pre-seeking investment?
It depends. It's like the type of thing that you want to think of, you want to get ahead of. You know, you want to plan for and to think about the implications early on, especially if you're creating a high growth type company or invested in one. So there are actions to take then, and that's really how we built our platform and approach, you know, is to run a higher level sort of diagnostic early on, both for a company or an investor. We, right now for us, we primarily work with venture capital funds. And so we'll perform that diagnostic across their portfolio and then help them gather the data that they need to ultimately support eligibility when they have an exit. And to avoid these sorts of tripwires that could cause them to lose eligibility, which could either be actions taken by the portfolio company in their case, the corporation that they hold stock in, or could be actions that they themselves take as shareholders. And so they have to be forewarned of both, or you know, help them avoid that. You know, and then at the same time, there are opportunities. There are all these planning mechanisms. So if you're a founder, like the QSBS benefit is capped at $10 million per shareholder per company. But there are some planning methods to maximize the benefit beyond 10 million, like gifting shares. If you're a company founder, you could give shares to your family members and they're a separate taxpayer. They get treated, they get a separate $10 million exclusion. And so, but you need to do that well in advance. So to your point or to your question, it makes sense to know what you have so that you can plan for it, to know if your stock qualifies as QSBS, so you can take some of those planning actions.
So your background, you say you're an accountant by nature, essentially.
Accountant by nature, by blood, with various family backgrounds, and by career.
Understood. And then you said something that interested me a lot. You talk about the platform and the approach, right? And there's this hybrid of legal and accounting, and essentially in developing any platform and approach to a strategic initiative, you know, there's definitely, I would say, efficiencies and optimizations that are happening along the way, correct? So your problem, what's that?
Yeah, go on.
So, I mean, the platform you've built, essentially the work that the platform can do, how many humans would you need to actually do the work that this platform you've built is actually doing?
Well, there are certain things to like drive efficiencies that we've undertaken with tech, with like language models, and that enable us to be more efficient kind of like internally at our company. So, we could use language models to read legal docs, and funny enough, like they're actually better at it than we are. I've been.
Look, as a startup, right? You got to consider: do I go out there and hire an associate? Do I go and hire a seasoned veteran attorney? Or even, you know, we talk to a lot of law firms, and we work with a lot of law firms, and there's always this question like, oh, I need to go recruit an associate, or I have a medical record I have to go through; it's 1,000 pages, or you know, you have different types of attorneys that have to filter through like financial records. Yep. But it sounds like, you know, being on like the cutting edge of accounting and legal as a hybrid, you've built this platform that it sounds like, you know, you say it's more efficient than yourself in a way, but at the same time, I mean, how long does it take the platform to do the work? Like compared to you, if you're like, all right, I'm gonna upload this financial document that a VC fund gave me, or their portfolio, they gave me 50 portfolio companies, I need to analyze them. If you were to analyze them one by one, like let's just start with one company out of their portfolio, analyze their paperwork personally, how long would that take you?
Yeah, well.
How long would it take you? What's your guess?
I don't know. Say,
how long would the LLM take?
Say several hours per portfolio company.
And your language model?
And the language model reads it in about 10 seconds. You know,
maybe you were shy to say it because it's just like such a time shaving. It's like within that time, we're both baseball coaches, right? So you can go coach your t-ball team at night rather than tell, hey, honey, I'm busy. I got to be working all night because I got to read hundreds of pages of documents.
Yeah.
You're like, I put it in a machine and did it in 10 seconds.
Well, exactly. And not only does it do it quicker, but it picks up on things that we might not have seen ourselves. So every document that we deal with is like an unstructured sort of document. You know, tax returns are probably the most structured, where it's an actual form, but there's a lot of unstructured data in tax returns as well. You have all these supporting schedules. And so what the language models do really well, like for us, has been to be able to read unstructured data and piece it together. So like just like one thing, for example, one of the tripwires with QSBS is stock repurchases. So if the company buys back a certain amount of its stock from existing shareholders, that could cause other shareholders to lose eligibility on their stock. And so certain share purchase agreements, say for like a Series A financing round for a company, might include an intended use of some of those proceeds for buying back a portion of the company's stock from previous shareholders, founders, folks that have stock already. And so, you know, there's spots where you could think, oh, well, I'll go to that section and look there, but it's not always mentioned there. You know, you have to go through the whole document. And if you know what you're looking for, or in the case of the language models, like we could train them to look for these types of situations or stock repurchases, stock redemptions, they're able to flag it. So like sometimes it might be in a supporting schedule and we might not have seen it except for the language model, you know, looking at everything. So so it's we found them to be really good, you know. But and that's just on like kind of the efficiency side, with like you were saying, like being able to do more with less people. You know, but then there's also like just the maybe more traditional benefits of a platform for this sort of thing. And part of that for us is that there are multiple parties. We're connecting companies, their shareholders, the shareholders' tax preparers, the venture funds that invest in the company as well. And, you know, there's data that we need from each of them and information that we have to provide to all of them. Uh-huh. And, you know, by doing it through the platform, we're able to deliver that much easier, you know, and connect all the right folks.
Well, I'm sure everything becomes very timely when you're talking investments and funds and investors. It's a very emotional, you know, like decision. So if you wait too long or you don't get the information in front of somebody at a rapid rate, I mean, yeah, time is money, right?
Yeah, exactly. And so like, this is the type of thing you can miss it. Like we work, for example, with one family office we work with, we started analyzing their portfolio this year. They had a gain in 2021. So this is 2024 now, it's 3 years ago. Yeah. So what we realized is, well, wait a minute, they paid the tax on that gain. And there's a rollover provision. So like with QSBS, if you have a gain, normally in order to have it excluded from tax, you have to have held it for 5 years. Mm-hmm. If you don't meet that holding period, you could roll those proceeds into another investment and continue working towards the 5 year clock and the 100% exclusion. So in this case, the investor paid the tax in 2021, yet we realized through looking at their entire portfolio that, well, wait a minute, they made another investment that could qualify as a rollover, and they didn't need to pay the tax in 2021 if they just connected all the right dots. You know, they took actions, but they didn't know that the actions that they took conformed to this part of the tax code. And, you know, so they missed it, and it was like $100,000 in savings.
Wow.
So just by like...
software.
Yeah, yeah, very, very good. It was doing its job, you know, and us doing our job, and which is really to identify those sorts of opportunities and help people benefit from them. You know, people that effectively like should be able to benefit from these, you know, they're doing everything that the government wants you to do by creating these sorts of programs and incentives, but they're hard to carry out. So, you know, we're trying to make it easier for folks to carry those out.
Well, it's funny, you mentioned AI, right? And here's both of us. I mean, essentially, I won't be shy to say we're both like 2 decades into our careers, pretty much, right?
Yeah.
Fair to say. Yeah, about 20 years in. And it's like, I, you know, now I'm a parent, you're a parent too. I speak to older parents, and they're telling me about their kids in college. And the number one thing they're so proud of, I swear, every parent that has a kid in college right now loves to tell me about the AI that they're studying in college. Do you hear the same thing sometimes? Yeah, so it's like you hear about like law school, you hear about just like any types of like undergrad programs or MBA programs, like they're all studying AI. It's like you can't get around AI essentially right now, right?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, it's been a huge shift. We've seen it just in what we're doing, you know, over the last few years, where we were like when we started our company 5 years ago, and we were building software, you know, that we don't need because it's outdated because of it. AI is able to do it better, you know, so it's pretty wild. It's a wild shift and causes a shift in thinking as to like how we, what solutions we provide and like what we're able to provide. And where there's like a, in a way, like a de-emphasizing of the actual tech and, more of a focus on the specialized knowledge and the service aspects that we're able to deliver to clients, you know, so that's what I've seen. But you know, it's moved so fast in just a few years that it's certainly a lot to keep up with. And, but like a type of thing that like it's out there now and.
Cat's out the bag.
Yeah.
it's basically, we're at the 1 year anniversary almost of like GPT being released to the world by OpenAI. Every other tech company, I mean, essentially they tried to suppress AI, right? Like if you're Google and certain companies, like you had no benefit to release AI until somebody said to the world, like, here it is, what are you going to do about it? Because now we're the leaders. And that's essentially what OpenAI did with the release of ChatGPT. They saw themselves pushed to the brink. They needed funding. They saw Google, you know, having like internal tech battles, like about like how good their AI was by winning the game Go. And then essentially, you know, OpenAI was like, you think you guys are good? Like, wait till the world sees this. ChatGPT, I think it was more popular than the most wildly popular social medias, like in an instant. They just lit the world on fire.
Totally. And like, there was a speaker who came to the Legal Tech Summit last year, which the Legal Tech Fund.
What's Legal Tech Summit?
So there's an annual summit. It's coming up December 4th through 6th in Miami. Which will be the third annual Legal Tech Summit. Nice. So 2 years ago, the summit was right after ChatGPT version one or first generation was released.
1 year out, you know, or at that anniversary.
Yeah, that was the first I had really heard about it, and it was like literally a few weeks, you know, after it was really released. And then flash forward a year later, there was a presentation last year on like where they took each of the versions of ChatGPT. There were like four generations at the time, and they had it take the bar exam. And they showed how like each version did, and like the first version got like 50% of the multiple choice right, and but couldn't write the essays, you know. And okay. Flash forward to the fourth version, which is all within a year, and it got I think 100% on the multiple choice and could write the essays, you know. And so it was a vast improvement.
All in under a year.
All in under a year, yeah.
It's like we, you know, we base a lot of tech on like Moore's law of like, you know, doubling the speed of a semiconductor every 18 months, right? And then now we're looking at AI.
Yeah, much quicker. And then like responding to that, you know, with a company has certainly been challenging, but exciting, you know, because it opens up all types of possibilities. So as a startup, to be nimble and be able to incorporate this stuff and figure out like our use case, been a focus area.
Well, as like as entrepreneurs, innovators, like I'd say we are kind of like our own worst enemy of like perfection, or like am I keeping up with the rest of the pack? Mm. When the reality is if you're even like applying like this much AI, the probability is like a lot of the market might not be applying like even any AI, right? They're batting at zero because they're not even taking a swing at the fence to be like, or they're not even getting up there to like have a strike to be like, is this as accurate or can I do this a little bit better? Mm-hmm. You know, I don't want to give it away, but I'll give it away, right? So I've like had some like just even personal emails I have to write or whatnot. So I just like, I write a response. I'm a little emotional about it sometimes. So I'm just like, you know, ChatGPT, here's my response to this situation. Could you just like, you know, make it a little like toned and like effective? And the responses are on point. And the reaction from the human on the other side, it's great.
If it is a human reaction.
Well, yeah, I mean, I could be talking to, you know, I could be talking to AI as well, right? Yeah, the reality is they could be taking my reply, running it through GPT and being like, hey, here you go, Zach. But I don't know that's necessarily happening. I think they're just like, oh, this guy's really empathetic. He understands the situation.
Yeah, no, exactly. I mean, it's a, you know, it's a great assistant in all these use cases.
I think it's just going to go hyperspeed. I mean, look, we're in an era of self-driving cars. That's one. Yeah. Then Elon saying he's going to release his drone in the next like year plus. Uh-huh. And we're just at the beginning. We're like literally in the first inning of like what's to come.
Yeah, no, I agree. I got an Apple Watch just yesterday.
And powered by what? Apple AI? Is it, what do they say? Apple Intelligence.
Hopefully.
So they say. Right. So, yeah, I mean, here we are on the brink of just like the next big innovation of AI. I mean, look, the internet came to be in their like what the I would say mid-90s when I was doing dial up back in the day, you know, and then we hit high speed in the early 2000s. So we're about 30 plus years into the internet. And now we're in an era where we're, you know, we see AI I'd say it's one of the biggest innovations in technology since the internet coming to be that we've seen. Right.
I would think so. You know, I've seen
as a member of Legal Tech Fund, is like AI, is it a requirement?
Or is it not a requirement, but you know, I think like you had said, like everybody needs to figure out how to use it, you know, for their own benefit, you know, every type of company. And so like, whether that's embedded in your product or using it to just make your team more efficient, you know, if you're not doing it, you know, you're gonna be at a loss because like other folks are. And I guess it's probably not a requirement, but probably not
checkbox
approach these days, you know, because it could probably be more efficient, or like you were saying with email, you know, you could find ways to check your old work better, or you know, get the assistance you need. You know, there are less excuses maybe for mistakes than there are.
I mean, look, it's even raising children in an era of like iPads and iPhones that are used to like get their attention, right? Like the ability, I think, to like communicate and talk to humans is going to be one of the most undervalued, underappreciated arts and skills that the world's just not even going to understand in a decade or two, right? Because people, you know, it's, and we're all guilty of it a little bit. If you want to quiet somebody down, you put them in front of a television, iPad, you know, it does the work, right? But Yeah, in a way though, it's just like this art of communication, the art of just being able to talk. On the top of the applied like AI, it's like if my child is writing a paper in middle school or high school, like I'm not gonna like really comment on how I feel about that, or like when they get to college, if they're writing an essay in 2034 from scratch, like, it's gonna be, it's like, what do you do? Do you like say like, dude,
What are you doing?
like go break open the book on the shelf, go dust off that book, start reading that book, do the research, start in the glossary of the encyclopedia and work your way forward. What do you say, dude? Go use the search engine, use the computer, even talk to a little AI and come up with some innovative solutions.
There's got to be some middle ground. I mean, we're going through this with our kids now in elementary school, and just like learning some of the skill sets behind research themselves and making sure they can embrace some of that, and then apply some technology to what they're doing. So I think the same like for what we're doing. It's like if you ask ChatGPT some of the technical nuances, like which we've done with the tax incentives we work with, it gets it wrong a lot of the time. And it's because there's a lot of information out there and misinformation that it's reading, rather than kind of like thinking about the application of the law in the situation that we're dealing with. So it's, there's you have to be careful with some of it. So like for us, we're not really using it in that regard yet to sort of like interpret any of the rules or apply them to the companies that we're working with. We're using it more for collecting the right data, like that type of data extraction, and some of the interpretation of the data, but not interpretation of the law.
I like to call it like a closed circuit evaluation of data utilizing the models. That's something too, like that we get into conversations about when we talk to lawyers and just people about AI. It's like the number of use cases, like the it's mind-boggling as to like how many like specific areas it could innovate like just the way somebody works, like from analyzing a report, analyzing a medical record, to drafting a response, drafting a summary. And these four items, I'm just at four, could all particularly be programmed and innovated in their own way. You could take one of those things and build a tool for years on out right now to only perfect just like one aspect of what AI is really could be strong at, right?
No, totally. I'm with you.
Yeah. It's very interesting. And you said, we were talking about some of the use cases of how, who utilizes your software. I mean, you said family offices, VCs, investors, or even, I guess, people seeking investment. I mean, what else is the long tail of how people use cap gains?
I think so. Like for us, it's starting with venture investors and family offices, people that invest in private companies, because that's with the type of stock that benefits from QSBS. And they want to, we're helping them address it proactively, early planning ahead for it. But then for us, it's like, well, what's kind of tangential to that? We need data for each of those shareholders. They need data from the underlying companies that they invest in. And a lot of the investors connect or like introduce us to those portfolio companies of theirs. But there's like an educational aspect where the founders of those companies need to learn about this tax incentive, learn that it applies to them, or like what they need to know about it, and just so that they could be prepared. And so that's one of the next connections for us. Like, we already do a lot of it, as a company, but then building workflows and stuff in there tailored to the corporate use case. And then similarly for any shareholder that has an actual gain, a lot of tax preparers aren't that well versed in these niche areas of the tax code. So they might only see one QSBS situation in their career. So to learn all the nuance of it for one client is a bit ridiculous, for a tax preparer. So there's that aspect too, excuse me, of using the platform to provide the tax preparer with not only the documentation that they need from their client, but the education on what they need to know to claim this on their client's behalf. I would say so. And results for these different stakeholders and how it could all work together. We've seen part of what got me started on this journey is seeing what happens when the shareholders can't get the data that they need from the company, or the tax preparers don't know how to claim these benefits on for their clients, or don't point out the opportunities associated with it. And it's just a, you know, it's a not only a missed opportunity for that that investor, shareholder, taxpayer, but it's like it's not allowing the tax incentive that the government put out there to work effectively or to be optimized. You know,
yeah,
so
I mean,
that's what we're trying to do. Is
yeah, it sounds like you're empowering innovation. You're allowing people to leapfrog from one innovation set of, you know, raising money, being successful, having an exit, and taking those same resources that they just had in their exit, and like the government's intention is to just carry forward an innovation.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And so we're kind of just trying to facilitate a better use of this tax incentive, or like facilitate its intended use, I should say.
That's awesome, which is parlaying innovation, just taking everything to the next level.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
Definitely, Jonathan, like everything that you've shared today, just the, you know, the way that your platform's innovated, the, you know, that you've, you know, utilized it to just create like a structured approach for how, you know, people go at QSBS, and just like the innovations that Cap Gains has really started to establish in the, you know, and just set, I would say, you know, a solid ground, solid framework for how people should, you know, approach this situation.
Yeah, that's what we're trying to do.
Oh, it sounds like you're more than trying over there. It sounds like you're being very successful at it. So Jonathan, like, you know, just share a little bit more, like, how can people find you?
Sure. So you can reach us on our website, capgains.com, capgains.com. Well, we started initially through an informational website about QSBS. So qsbsexpert.com is also, we're there as well. You know, or feel free to reach out to me, jonathan@capgains.com.
Awesome. Definitely, Jonathan, I appreciate the time and thank you for everything. Thanks for sharing your knowledge and, you know, everything you bring to the table.
Likewise, great to be with you, and thank you for having me on.
For sure, we'll talk soon. See ya. Thank you.
That's it for today's episode of The Firm Report, brought to you by Exults, a full-service digital marketing agency helping law firms reach new heights. If you enjoyed the conversation, make sure to like, subscribe, and share the show with someone who'd find it valuable. You can find us on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you next time.